Okay, so we were starting to touch on the Muksa Sugyas here. Two Muksa Sugyas specific before we get to the Mishnah. So just to go back over the Gemara, so on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, two dots, the Gemara said as follows, Amar Le'abaye the Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Aglili Damar Lochem Le'Klavim. So according to Rabbi Yosef, who says that the limitations of Lochem Velo LeBlank exclude animals, and as we saw in the Ramban, the assumption of the Gemara is that if animals are excluded from Lochem, that means that they're not considered a necessity on Yom Tov. If they're not a necessity on Yom Tov, anything done for them is Muktza. And that's the assumption of the Gemara throughout. So according to Rabbi Yosi Aglili, that animals are excluded. Hani sufsele l'chiyusa hechi shadin lehu b'yom tov. So how are you able to throw them, these pits, from dates on Yom Tov? And so apparently that was what they used to do, right? When they would finish eating, the way some people throw their leftovers to their dogs. So they would throw the leftovers, they would throw the leftover seeds. The problem is that seeds, or the pits, once you've taken the fruit off of them, are worthless, except as dog food. But if you assume that dog food, being dog food alone, doesn't make something not muktzah, so then it should be usur for you to throw them to your animals, and yet this was the practice. So Amarlei said, no, ho'ol v'chazu lahasaka, since they do have a purpose for human beings, because you could use them for a fire, you could use them as fuel for a fire, and since it's Yom Tov, you're allowed to burn a fire, so therefore they're not exclusively for animal use, they're also for human use, and therefore they're not muksa, and therefore you can throw them to the animals. So the Gemara says, fine, tenach b'yabeshta. That works if they're dried out and they'll burn. B'ratifta ma'iklamim. Or what if they're wet? What if they're still moist? Then they're not going to burn. Amr lehu. So Amr lehi said, that's not true. Chazal has a gadol. If you're making a big fire, so then they will work. Tenach b'yom tov. So the Gemara says, that's very good for yom tov, but b'shabbos ma'iklamim. On Shabbos, how could you move these seeds? These pits, so the Gemara says, "Metaltalin and lehu agav rifta." So you're right; you couldn't directly move them. What you do is you'd have to, when you were eating the dates, you'd have to draw as you were taking the seeds out. You drop them onto a piece of bread, and you would move it on the piece of bread. And since the bread is not muktza, so you'd be allowed to move what's on the bread as well, meaning these seeds. Kiddush Shmuel, like when this is the position of Shmuel, Damar Shmuel, Os Adam called Sarko Bipas, you're allowed to do whatever you need to do with bread, right? You're allowed to use bread to negate the mukta status of things that you want to move, but themselves are mukta. So just a little bit on this notion. So this comes, this notion comes really appears more fully in a Gemara in Shabbos, and that's the Gemara here in number 5. Mos shall kar minayah. The Gemara is discussing what happens if you have money that you need to move off of a bed, off of a pillow, so you shake it off. So Amar Rav Hoshea, shachach arniki bechatzer. Let's say you forget your wallet in your courtyard. So now you want to move it. So what do you do? Maniach alea kikar o tinok mitaltla. So, put a loaf of bread on it, or a baby, right, and then move it, because now it is, right, it is what is carrying, or what is underneath these things which are mutter to move. Amar Rav Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak, shachach levena b'chatzer, if you leave a brick in the courtyard, so meniach alei kikar u'tinok u'mitaltla, again, put a baby, or put a loaf of bread on it, and then you're allowed to move it. Amar Rav Yehuda bar Shelem, Rav Yosi, pamachas shachu. The skyam leamos be sartia. They had left an entire stack full of money. Uvo v'shalosh of Yochanan, and they asked Rabbi Yochanan what to do. Amar lahen and ichol kikar otinok v'taltalua. So Amar Mazutra hilchacha kechol hanishmaita bishocheach. You're allowed to do this only if you forget, right? All these things only work when you forget. And Rashi Amar afilo shochach namilo. Even if you forget, you're not allowed to do this. This dispensation of using the bread or the baby to remove the status of muksa only works elameis bilvad when you want to move a dead body for the kavod of the mace. So then you can put a loaf of bread on the dead body and you can move it. But that's because you combine the fact that you're now carrying something mutzer, using the dead body, with the fact that you want, because of kavod hameis, you want to move the dead body out of the open courtyard or out of the field, wherever the body happens to be. And that's why it is mutter. Now, this is sort of actually the flip case, right? Our case is where you're moving the muktzah on top of the bread. Here is where you're moving the body with the bread on top of it. But the Rishonim still see an equivalence between these two, where the Gemara has this assumption that if you have something which is fundamentally muktzah, you can quasi-remove the muktzah status by either using it as a base for non-muktzah, right, or vice versa, putting the muktzah on something which is itself significant and not muktzah.
Right. You put it on a piece of bread, he says.
Yeah.
But it's muktzah, you pick it up in the first place.
No, because when you eat the date, right, it's in your mouth, what are you doing with it? Right, it has to go somewhere. You don't have to leave it in your mouth, right? I don't know, you spit it onto it, or you when you take it out.
But if you have the pit sitting around, you pick it up and you put it on the bread.
So that you couldn't do, right. The assumption is you can't do that. It's that as you're eating, you know.
You can put the bread on top, according to what they're saying here. I mean, how does that work?
Right, so the seed case, presumably what you do is you spit it out onto the bread, right? You have, like, the bread waiting there.
But if the pit
you couldn't. Exactly, you couldn't.
So why in this Gemara and Shabbos?
So in the Gemara and Shabbos, the other way around, right? You take the mutter thing and put it on the usher thing, and then use the other usher thing to carry it.
But the usher thing would have to be constitute a buses.
That's exactly what you're doing, right? You're making it a basis, l'davar hamutter, to allow carrying it.
So it wouldn't apply to a pit.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's flipping it, right? These are two, right? These are inverses of each other. Either you're using, in our Gemara, using the muktzah, the muktzah is what's on top of the mutter thing, and in the Gemara and Shabbos, it's the mutter thing which is on top of the thing which is muktzah.
But there's a fundamental difference between the two. In the case of Shabbos, one is you have hefsed, and you forgot about it, and it emphasizes that you had no intent. And the other is kibud hamet, and the case that we have is an issue of convenience.
Right, and this is really, so that the reason that Rishonim have a problem is because even though these are inverse cases, the point seems to be similar, right? That you're allowed to take something which is fundamentally mukta and use a non-mukta object to remove the mukta status, but exactly what Howie notes is what all the Rishonim note is, well, okay, but why is it that our Gemara just says, well, that's fine, right? Just, you know, when you spit out those seeds, put them on a loaf of bread, and then use that bread to feed your dogs. Like, it's totally fine. And the Gemara in Shabbos says, first possibility, it's only if it happens by accident. I mean, you forgot about it, and it ended up that way. And the second day in the Gemara is that's not sufficient. It has to be that plus kavanah meis, right? Which is always at, like, the very top of the dispensations that we divvy out. So which is it? Right. Do we waive the laws of muktzah whenever, as long as you can, you know, somehow construe the situation that there's non-muktzah involved? Or do we limit that dispensation to, you know, kavod hames?
But what's the basis of muktzah? Isn't the basis of muktzah that you could have done it before Shabbos or Yom Tov and didn't do it?
What do you mean?
Why is it muktzah? It's muktzah because...
I mean, there's a million different types of muktzah, right?
The basis for muktzah is basically you could have done something before...
Well, not necessarily. Sometimes yes, sometimes no, right? I mean, sometimes things are intrinsically muktzah because they are disgusting, right? Muktzah machmas mius is, right, muktzah... There's different muktzah. There's muktzah of etim vavanim, right? Which this is probably what it is. Things are just worthless. Right, which yes, they're mukta because they have no purpose. If you designated a purpose for Yom Tov, then they would be mutter. If you didn't, then they're usser. In this case, you didn't, so they're mukta. Right? The Gemara is saying you're not removing
seeds, so you couldn't designate the seeds beforehand.
How right.
To do that.
Right, you couldn't, but right. That makes them mukta. The assumption of the Gemara is that they're muktzah. The Gemara is saying, despite the fact that they're muktzah, can we allow you to move it anyways using something which isn't muktzah, right? The bread or the... So, but which is it, right? When do we provide this dispensation? Because it's clearly muktzah. It's a classic case of etzem vavanim. It's something which is worthless. So, for example, you look at Tosfos on the page. Tosfos asks this question, right? Tosfos says, Osa adam kol tzarko v'pas. This is v'tema. Damar b'shabas, zlom ruheter kikar, o tinok elu meis bilvad. The Gemara in Shabbos says very explicitly, this heter is limited to moving things for dead people, right? For kavod hames, which this is not that case. So he says, v'yesh lomar b'davar sheyachol lasos mi b'od yom, amar hasam d'lo amar heter el hames bilvad. Aval hani suf d'lo lo hayachol lasos merav yom. This is what Alan pointed out, right? Is that mukta, something is mukta because it has no use. But there's two different types of muktzah, two different levels of muktzah. There are things which, before Yom Tov, existed, had no use, but you potentially wanted to give them a use. So in that case, if you didn't give it a use before Shabbos, we're not going to waive the prohibition. The only time we'll do it is for a mace, because a mace is different. It's covered a mace, and the standards are, right? We always will waive as many zurim as we can. But in this case, they didn't exist before Yom Tov. I mean, they existed, but not in any way that they were muktzah. They used to be part of a date. And a date is not muktzah. They became muktzah on Shabbos because once you ate the date around them, now all you were left with was a seed. So Tosafot says, it depends. The more muktzah something is, the harder it is to matir it. The less muktzah something is, the easier it is. So something which was muktzah before Shabbos, you could have done something to it before Shabbos, and you didn't, so then it's really, really muktzah, because A, on the level of Pshia, right, you chose not to do anything before Shabbos, and also, if muktzah is about something being removed from your das, if something existed before Shabbos and you chose not to designate it, so it's really, really muktzah, in the classic sense of what the word muktzah means, meaning it's set aside for no purpose. It was there before Shabbos, you didn't think about it. In that case, the only time we waive muktzah is lemeis. In our Gemara, there's a reason. You didn't. The seeds are eitzim vavanim, right? They're useless. But they're not really useless, right? Meaning, before Shabbos, they were fruit. They were useful. All the way until you ate the fruit, they were part of the fruit. Once you ate the fruit, now there was nothing left. So now they're basically worthless. But they're not totally worthless, right? If you had set them aside before Yom Tov for the animals, maybe it'd be different. But you couldn't because it was part of the fruit. So therefore, it's a lesser type of muktzah, and there was less pshia. So therefore, we can waive the iser for a lesser reason. And that's what Joseph says. That's it, right? That's the very simple difference. Okay. The Rashba in 6 also picks this up, and he says, "V'im tomar ha'kaimalan." Right in Shabbos, "Delom ruki kar lemeis bilvad." For oh, damrin b'Shabbos perak notel, bayim ona chakife umetaltelu rava yoev sakina metaltele v'amrav yosef kame charif v'shmeitzed the dar dike aimed the rabban b'shochech lechatchilam yomur. Right, it's Shabbos kuf membed, and it's another place in the Gemara. V'im kein heich hitter kan rav yosef gufi lizrok al pasach chatchilah kedei letaltelon. So how could rav yosef say you're allowed to throw those pits as you take them out of your mouth onto the bread lechatchilah? So as we saw, Tosafot said the difference is, were you able to do it yesterday or not? The Odiyesh Lomar, but the Rashba offers a second possibility. Dehasam shiny, shemetaltel iser mamish al yedeya heter shal gabav. Right? Tosafot assumed that fundamentally there's no difference between carrying mukta on something mutter or carrying something mutter on something which is mukta. The only right, they're fundamentally the same thing. The principle is you're moving mukta using something which is not mukta, and we don't pay attention to the distinction of which one's on top, which one's on the bottom. The distinction is rather how did they become mukta, how many chances did you have to remove the problem of mukta. But the Rashba says there's a much easier answer staring you in the face, which is exactly what we noted, that the cases are inverse. That in our Gemara, you're moving the muktzah on something mutter, as opposed to the Gemara in Shabbos, where you're moving the something mutter on something aser. Now, what's the difference? Right, so he says it's very simple. Right, so he says, there's a difference. Because if you look at the cases, in the case in the Gemara and Shabbos, are you carrying the bread or are you carrying the dead person? You're carrying the dead person. It's just that it is now a basis, so it's not totally worthless. The dead body is useless. It's just that you use it to carry the bread. Did you really need it to carry the bread? No, you could carry the bread separately. So this is a farce, right? This is a harama, right? That we're using the dead body to carry the bread. Who uses a dead body on the best of times, right, to carry bread, right? No one does this. It's a harama of sorts, but it's mutter for a mace. But our case isn't like that at all. Our case is the exact flip. The point is that as you're spitting out the seeds, you can throw them on your bread. But what are you carrying? The bread. It's just that the seeds happen to be on top. Those are two very different cases. The question, the halachic question here is, what are you carrying? Right? Or to put it differently, the case in the Gemara and Shabbos is, what you are carrying is aser. The question is, how can you be matir it? So to be matir something which is aser, it's much harder. In our case, you're carrying the bread, which is mutter. The question is, how much muksa would you have to put on it to aser it? Right? That, it takes a lot more to aser something which is mutter than it takes to matir something which is aser. So therefore, in the Gemara and Shabbos, you're right, we only allow that dispensation for a dead body. In the Gemara and Beitza, we allow that even l'chadchila, because in the end of the day, you're carrying the bread, you're not carrying the pits. Then the Rashba says, okay, v'im tomar v'afilu kishim metaltel heter mamish, kevin de'efshel anar iser, hechishari. That doesn't help you very much, because I agree. It's better to carry the bread with the pits than it is to carry the bread using the dead body. But there's a more fundamental problem, which is, this all assumes, this is, let's say, I have my knapsack, right? And I forgot before Shabbos to take out a few dollars that were in the pocket, right? So, I'm allowed to carry my bag, presumably, right? Which has my svarim in it, right? I want to move my svarim across the room, so I'm allowed to move my bag, right? To bazel davar aser, le davar amoter. But what happens if the dollar isn't in the pocket? The dollar's just lying on top of the bag, right? So am I allowed to drag my bag across because, well, I don't really need the dollar, I'm just doing it for the books? No, because I can just shake my bag, the dollar will fall on the floor, and I can just carry the bag. So the Rashba says, it's very nice that you draw the distinction. I understand why the bread case is not as bad as the dead body case. But there's a bigger problem, which is slice of bread, a few seeds, shake the bread, the seeds will fall off, move the bread, right? I mean, you're still allowing carrying mukta lechatchila where it is avoidable. It's better than the mace case, but it's still an avoidable case of mukta, like avoidable right now. So how can you ever matir anything which is mukta-like when it is avoidable? And this is a Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Mem Aleph Amud Beis. He says, "V'hadit nan no daldim kalkala ve'evin besocha v'ukimna be'kalkala mulei peiros prepared to betanfid lo'efshar lenure ha'efshar lo." The Gemara says you're allowed to move a whole package of fruit or straw or whatever you need, even if there's a rock in the middle of it. And the Gemara says the case is where if you shake the fruit to try to get the rock out, the fruit will fall and get dirty. So then we allow you to carry it even with the rock. But if the rock was sitting on top and you could just shake it and it would fall off and the fruit would stay clean and be fine, you're chayev to do that. You're trying to avoid mukta as much as possible. The same thing is true of money that's on your pillow. Shake the pillow, the money falls off. So he says, V'yesh lomar dehasam kishitzarach legufo. So he says, there's a distinction. And this is a very fine distinction. But okay. He says there's two ways of permitting carrying mukta. One is, right, mukta of eitzim vavanim. I mean, mukta of things which are mukta simply because they have no use. Those two heterim are called l'tzorach gufo or l'tzorach mekomo. So l'tzorach gufo means that I need the object, meaning it was worthless, but now I need the object. The other one is I don't need the object, but I need the place where the object currently is, so I need it away from here. So the Rashba says, well, it depends why you're moving it. If you're moving it l'tzorach gufo, so then the halacha is that you have to shake off the muksa. And the reason, I think, is very mistaber. If I'm moving the fruit, let's say, right, I need the fruit. I don't need the rock. If the reason I'm allowed to move the fruit, which are not really muksa, but the reason I'm moving the fruit to begin with is because I need the fruit, and I don't need the money on top of them, so then I should shake it off, because I'm entering into the situation from the vantage point of I'm moving that which I need, and I'm leaving that which I don't need. If I drag along the money, which I don't need, I'm undercutting the heter. The heter to move this was litzorech gufo. I need the object. Like, I need the object actively. So if I then leave things on which I don't need, I'm undercutting the very nature of the heter. Right? I'm undercutting the situation. But that's not true of litzorech mekomo. If I move the bread, not because I need the bread, but because I don't want the bread on my table anymore, right? I'm cleaning up the table. So I never said I needed the bread to begin with. It's just mutter for me to move the bread because I don't want the bread here. Right? I mean, the bread's not muksa, but whatever. The point is, I'm allowed to move the bread. I don't need the bread. The reason I'm relating to the bread is because I don't want the bread left on the table anymore, so I'm moving the bread. But then, if I move a bunch of things along with the bread, that doesn't undercut the heter. The whole point is I'm trying to clear off this space. Once I'm clearing off the space, everything gets conceptually mashed up together. Right? Because, again, if I'm moving something because I need it, so then the way I relate to the object is I need you, but that means that anything I don't need is conceptually distinct from that which I do. So if I can, I have to shake them apart. But if I'm moving something because I need the place, right? So anything that occupies this place becomes one unit. It's that which shouldn't be here anymore. Right? And therefore, yes, part of it is bread, which is mutter, part of it is seeds, which are usher, but the point is, it doesn't matter. I'm clearing the table. I want the table to be totally clear. Some of the things are muksa, some of the things aren't muksa, but my fundamental goal is to clear off the table, and, as we all know, when we clear off the table, so some of the stuff we put in the sink, some of the stuff we put in the garbage, some of the stuff we put in recycling, some of the stuff we put in compost, right? That's exactly what they're doing, right? They're cleaning off the table. They put the dishes in the sink, right? There's bread on the table. So what do they do with the bread? They're throwing it to the dog, and along with that, right? They're throwing the seeds. Big deal.
I thought it's muksa, and you throw it from the Como. You could do it without the bread.
Yeah, that's right.
So the assumption I think the Rashi must be having, right, just on a practical level, is that a few seeds on the table don't really take up the place, right? Once you're moving the bread, right, it sounds like what he's assuming, right, that the seeds themselves, you know, they're not really what's bothering you. It's that you put them on the bread, and then you need the space for the bread, so you're allowed to move the seeds. But I just assume on like a Matthias level, that's what he's assuming, right? Because, again, their reality was different than ours. Meaning for us, like a bunch of, you know, chewed seeds on the table, it's like, you know. But realistically, that's also because, like, you know, you spit it out on a plate, and then just, you know, I don't know, you take the, you know, the disposable plastic and type the whole thing. Like, we just think differently. Right? Meaning it was totally standard in the time of the Gemara. We know from the Gemara, the way they got rid of seeds normally was just threw it on the floor and let it decompose into the floor because the floor was dirt. Like, they're living in a different reality. So, the seeds, I assume, it has to be some sort of Matthias assumption like that. I'm not really sure.
Why can't you say, Tzorach L'Mekomo, that you only move it as much as you...
So in general, we assume that once you're moving something to Tzorach L'Mekomo, you can move it to wherever you want. Right? That's the halachic assumption, because once you have a heter to pick it up, you can move it to wherever you want. Right? That's how we always posit.
So you don't make that assumption with if you tzorach gufo.
So you do, but once you move something with tzorach gufo, you're allowed to do that. You're
saying you should shake it off.
Right. Meaning, once you have the heter to pick it up, what he's assuming is that with tzorach gufo, the heter doesn't extend to other things that are on it unless necessary. Right? As opposed to tzorach makomo, because I guess it's the positive versus negative need, right? The tzorach gufo, I don't need... The tzorach gufo, I need this. Therefore, I'm relating to the object qua object. So I'm relating it to the object in and of itself. Anything which is on it which I don't need is not the object I need. So it's distinct. So if I can, I should separate them. But if the tzorach makomo, I don't need the object. I need the object not to be here. So whatever is here, right, I just move off the table, right? It's... I mean, we all sort of know this, right? If I just took a plate and it was on the table, right? So if I want to clear the table, so if the plate is here, I'll move the plate. If I have, you know, leftover chips and rugelach on it, then I'll move that too, right? Once I've decided I'm finished eating, right, and I say clear the table, I don't start thinking, well, that's one with food, that's one with food. I clear off all the plates, the empty ones, the full ones. It doesn't matter, right? Once you start relating to something that way, right, I move it off. And the secondary thing is, yes, once we allow you to move something, let's start with Gufa, let's start with Makoma, we allow you to put whatever you want. Right? The question that the post can bring up is what happens, is that always true? Right? I mean, it's true, let's start with Gufa, it's true, let's start with Makoma. What happens if Shachach, right? What happens if you, you know, realize that you have your keys in your pocket, on, you know, your car keys in your pocket? So, you know, at that point, the Ramah and the Magen Avraham have an argument whether you're allowed, you have to just drop them where you are, or since they were in your pocket beheter, you know, you had them Erev Shabbos already, and then by Shabbos you remember they were there, so now I could just, you know, if I realize that's the case, so then I can just, you know, let's say I realize, make it easy, right, I realize when I get home from shul, so I could just say, okay, so like, I'll just, you know, I won't just drop it here. I'll just like walk into my room and I'll shake it out there, or I'll take off my suit pants already and I'll put on pajama pants and eat Shabbos dinner in my lounge pants or something, right? Whatever you do, you can do whatever you want. That's a machlokas Rambam and Avraham, whether this extends to all cases. But lisan zarach gufo zarach makomo, that's the assumption.
What if they're connected to your husbands?
What? So that's already a problem. We discussed this, I think. We did discuss this. We did, because we, by Ribu Shurim, right, we discussed the case of the car keys with that, right, the machlokas, Ramosha and Rishlomo Zalman, and machlokas about that, and what if, you have cigarettes, and you only need, right, you're allowed to carry a whole pack of cigarettes, if you only need one, right, all those Ribu Shurim, but one of those was the key case, right, where, how do you look at it, as you look at it, the role of ring of keys, or... But I'm pretty sure we discussed it then. I have to look back whether I actually... Either we discussed it, or I had it in my sources and I didn't put it, but I'm pretty sure I actually put it.
So at what point does something become a basis l'devar ha'asur?
So the general rule of basis l'devar ha'asur is that something is only a real basis if it was a basis ben ashmasha. Right? If it wasn't a basis, something can't become a... the standard psak is it can't become a full basis on Shabbos. Right, like the full status of buses. I mean, the buses that doesn't lose its status even after the mukta leaves is only when it's migu diskatzai ben hashmashos. Right, after otherwise it'll be a buses only while the object's on it, but not while the object's off. Right, hence the old minhag of putting, if you have your candles, then you put whatever you put. Right, to this day that is like the only thing I do with my wedding ring. Like I bought one when we got married, never wore it, and then like. It became my, buses negating ring.
The tray of the candles.
The tray of the candles. It is my, that is what it's been for years. It's my buses negating ring. Like, whatever.
You haven't said this to your wife.
But, no, she has. She loves it. She doesn't want me to wear a ring. No. She's fully aware of this. Like, if she wasn't, that'd be a problem. She's totally okay with this. When I went to buy the ring, I asked, Ora asked me, why are you buying a ring? You're not going to ever wear a ring. And I said, maybe one day I will. She's like, no, you won't. Trust me, you're never going to wear it. Why are you wasting the money? I said, maybe I will. How do you know I'll never wear it? Maybe there'll be a situation
where... Maybe
you'll
be a double bus. Double.
Yeah, exactly. And so, in the meantime, that's what it's done for years.
Otherwise you light candles for Shalom Bias, and then you negate it by putting...
Yeah, exactly. Like putting on the... That's what you do, the rhetoric, but my daughter doesn't care at all. She's like, okay. No, it was the other way around. I was like saying, I should get a ring, and she was like, shouldn't get a ring. If you get a ring, it shouldn't be a gold ring. Like, what do you... Just get some, fake ring, you can put a... Which is most of my friends actually don't wear rings. But, like, in Smicha, it wasn't a thing that people wore rings. But people who did wear rings, a lot of them got, $10, steel rings. I don't know. At least one of my friends was a U of T engineer. So he just got his, that ring stretched a little bit to be his wedding ring. Engineer's ring, the one from the bridge.
In my time, a lot of
my father-in-law also doesn't have it anymore. But
in my time, a lot of the smicha guys got rings when they got pulpits, and it didn't look good if they were not having a ring.
Right, so I don't know if my friends got it after smicha, but in smicha. Though at this point, I think I've seen it's less standard. I haven't really studied people's hands, but I don't remember seeing a wedding ring on Rai Kropkin's hand. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't really pay attention too much. Anyways.
It's a pain to take off.
What?
It's a pain to take off.
It's a pain to put on. But
it's a wash.
No, I think Ray Willig always says it. Ray Willig says that if people are in the business world, he thinks it's a chiyuv to wear a ring. Right, because he said, it is important that if you're in the business world that you wear a ring and everybody knows you're married.
Everyone knows I'm married.
Okay, fine. I'm just saying he thinks it's important when you're in the business world to make sure everyone knows you're married. So for younger people, says that definitely means a ring. At some point, yes. And I'm sure at this point, in your firm, everyone knows you're married. Realistically, when you're in the rabbinate, it's so standard for people not to wear rings. They just assume you're married. Like, once you're, like, 20, you know, they assume you're married. And, like, though there, I mean, there are cases it would have been helpful, but not because of girls. Because of Rosh Yeshiva, who tried to set me up. You know? Like, a year after I was married, like, so one of the Rosh Yeshiva came over to me, asked me if I was in the Parsha, which was a very awkward situation. Right? It would have helped if I had a ring.
It's so when, in the Parsha that you go home to your wife every day.
Exactly. I was like, I told him, I was sort of in the Parsha a year and somewhat ago. In the Parsha is like the yeshivish way of saying you are dating. Are you in the Parsha?
The two statuses are in the freezer and in the Parsha.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Alan, are you wearing a ring, or am I the only one in this whole place wearing a ring?
I don't wear a ring.
That's it.
I have
more. There you go. Okay, so it is. Yeah,
I have a ring somewhere, but I never wore it.
Yeah, I mean, it also depends on the culture. In New York, I think it's among people in business world, it's more standard. Yeah, mm-hmm. But in like Wayu Smicha, it was very, very rare.
I used to take it off during basketball season, and then as soon as it was over, my wife would make me put it back on.
Yeah, in the business world, if you're married and don't wear it, then it raises eyebrows. And,
Well, this is very helpful for Matthias, right? Where Willig is like telling me what it, you know, this is an assumption of what it's true in New York, but I get apparently Toronto. This is not the assumption. I look around. I stand corrected.
Like in the upscale shul, the upper and west and east side, also it was an expectation that, you know.
Yeah, no, it's very much a culturally dependent thing. The ring.
In the mafia, they wear rings.
Yes, I know. I know. Look, I grew up in Staten Island. I know, I understand. You look around, fine. This is mob country. Like, they write editorials in the paper. It's not like anybody hides this. Like, we know that.
In the Shiva world, they think it's a woman's...
Exactly. Right, well, that's the... Is it?
Right. Shiva.
Right, because they say it's... Yeah, exactly. It's which, I, for the record, do not think that is true. Meaning, I think wedding rings... I don't know how it's begged. Like, men's wedding rings are begged, right? Ish, not begged isha. Like, pasha, like, I don't know. Whatever.
Women's pants are. Women's pants.
In Achanami, I don't think there are. Women's pants are not begged ish. I don't care what anybody says. That's not the problem with them, right? Whatever problem there might be, it's not begged ish. I'm sorry. People who are listening, right? Well, the recorder is still on, but. I'm not poskening, but I am poskening that it's probably not a problem like it ish, right? It doesn't make... Fine, right? Pants, right? The potential problem is begged ish. I'm not sure it is. Sneas, yes, loved and depending on the pants. And then there's... If you listen to a lot of the Shiram and Wayu Torah, you'll hear. People will say, is it sneas? Well, depends on the pants. Begged ish? Probably not. But it's not from... Like, it's just, it's not the, what people do.
This is what's meant by Sofa Alicia Maya.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking to a recorder. It's definitely Sofa Alicia Maya. Whatever. That's fine. I don't care. Whatever. I'm not poskening. You can listen to the other Shirman Wayu Torah. They can posken for you. Okay. Fine. So the next Muktzeh Sugyas. The Gemara continues. Now I'm debating whether to delete it. Probably not. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Okay. So then the Gemara says, fine. Uplegi the Rishu ben Levi. This argues in the position of Rishu ben Levi. Damar Rishu ben Levi. Mezamnes anachri b'Shabbos. Mein mezamnes anachri b'Yomtov. You're allowed to invite a non-Jew on Shabbos, but not on Yomtov. Gzera shemayarba b'shvi lo. Because gzera that you might increase for them. Ravach b'Yakov. Amar afilu b'Shabbos nami. Nami lo. Even on Shabbos you can't invite the non-Jews. Why? Mishum shirei kosos. Because what's going to happen? They're going to drink the wine, and then they're going to leave the wine. There's going to be a little bit of wine in the bottom of the cup, and that wine is going to be stamina. Right? Because their wine was not mefushal. Right? We discussed this at length last week. Right. But I'll regalachas to remind everybody, our mefushal wine is not really mevushal in the sense that we cook it in a pot. We rely on the position of Rosh Hashanah that flash pasteurization counts as bishul, right? And that's why we call it mevushal. And that's why it's so easy for us to make mufushal wine. Even with that, people don't necessarily like mufushal wine because it apparently decreases the quality, right? The secret, you'll see, is that most really good wines are usually not mufushal. Good wines are sometimes mufushal, but there is a distinction, which you might not notice, but it's important to just know, is many wines, the same exact wine, the thin bottle, like the small thin bottle, will be mufushal, and the big bottle will not be mufushal, right? And the reason for that is because the small bottles are made for restaurants where they assume there'll be a non-Jewish waiter, and the bigger bottles are made for Jews at home where they assume there won't be non-Jews. And since some people are makbid, like the Rambam, to have non-Mavushal wine for Kiddush, so they'll make the bigger wine, the bigger bottles non-Mavushal, and the smaller bottles Mavushal. But the point is that it's really easy to make things Mavushal nowadays. It wasn't then, so most of their wine was not Mavushal.
Except most wines today are pasteurized, so they do have...
Most of them are. Not all of them, but most of them.
Yeah.
I'm assuming most. I don't know if it's really most. I assume it is. Most wine I've seen is Mavushal.
Right.
But there are some that are not. And if they're not...
Even non-Jewish wine.
Most of the good wines are not.
The really good wines are not.
Pasteurized.
I mean,
so there is a...
Well, and they might be flash pasteurized, but some of them are not.
Slight heating.
Right. You know, and then you have the problem, right? Because then you can't have a non-Jew pour it. And then even if you have a non-Jew... Right, even if you have non-Jewish...
Non-kosher wine.
Right, but then even if you have non-Jewish, like help around, it's a problem.
So why would they not then say it's Mavushal?
Because it's not the same process. It's not the same process.
I don't know. I mean, it could be that some people don't rely on Rosh Hashanah and assume that it's not Mavushal. I'm not really sure.
It requires a certain level of heating.
Right, no, for sure, but...
Pasteurization is a lower level of heating.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's different. I don't know. And of course, if it's not Mavushal, then you have the problem, because if you have even non-Jewish help, it creates a problem even having it open in the house, right? Then, you know, they've come up with fancy contraptions, you know, like they have...
I'll tell you, there's no labor in wine anymore today. It's all automated, the entire process. It's not touched with human hands.
Mostly, yeah. I mean, it depends on the winery. It depends on how, you know, boutique a winery it is. The smaller...
Niagara Falls, you have the kosher winery. I actually went for the tour.
Yeah.
And it is touched by human hands in the sense that...
That's the one that...
have to be cleaned.
That's the ice wine?
Well, they have the ice wine. They have...
that's what, Safona? Safona.
I ran a winery for a year. I can tell you there was no automation, no human hands.
You learn new things about people every day.
No labor. I mean, there was no labor. It was all automated. Yeah, you can clean the tanks. You clean the tanks,
right.
But
right.
That's not. But you don't touch the wine.
You don't.
Right, but if you touch the barrel, even it would be a problem.
Right.
But
and that's when
you
it's
don't
open.
Hear this much anymore. But up to about the '80s, you used to hear people in France and Switzerland and say they would drink the wine if it was pasteurized.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, I don't know the reality of what they do now, but it could be. Yeah, if they're, I mean, if you're assuming pasteurization works, so then if you know it's pasteurized,
yeah, that's very common. But I haven't
yeah.
Heard. Yeah. So who says that you can't use the Kiddush,
the Rambam says you shouldn't use it for Kiddush because the Rambam says that it has to be something which is royally nasach agave mizbeach. And since Mavushal wine you can't, so there are some people who are very makbid that they have just for Friday night, not for Shabbos day, for Friday night, which is the Doraisa, they have red, dry, unsweetened, non Mavushal wine. You'll see like Temanim will sometimes do this, or like Briskers will sometimes do this. Mm-hmm. I mean, Talmidim of Briskers, and some of my Rebbeim were machmer on this. Actually, many of my Rebbeim were machmer on this. Not so many of my Rebbeim while they had little kids at home, but some of them were. I'm pretty sure Lichtenstein was.
Yeah.
He was, right? He definitely was. I'm pretty sure. He was. I don't remember if Moshe was. I'm pretty sure Moshe was also. But my principal in high school was machmer on this.
Yitzi was.
That doesn't surprise me.
Right.
Doesn't surprise me.
His roommate also was, I remember.
Which?
Garf.
Okay. Okay. But the point is that nowadays, not such a big deal.
Who was there his roommate?
Avram Garfinkel.
He was my chavruta in Yeshiva de Kotel.
Really?
There you go. Small world. We're like learning so much about everybody tonight. It's like, it's a bonding experience here.
Really? He was our chaplain.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very small world. Okay, so the Gemara then says, fine, but in their time, realistically, the wine was not Mavushal. You poured it, and now it is. Right? Stam Yenam. Now, I pointed this out last week. Their world is so different from our world. In our world, we would never bring out any food that would become treif in the middle of the meal. We don't want anything not kosher in any way touching any of our pots and pans. But apparently, this was standard, right? You invite non-Jews over, you give them wine, right? And the fact that it treifed up your cup, okay, then you rinse it out. Okay, but the problem is, in the meantime, there are shirei kozers, which are stam yenam, and therefore it should be osur. The Gemara says, Ihachi didanami. So the Gemara says, if you think their cups become osur, our cups should also, because their cups may be stam yenam, but ours are just disgusting, right? But you finish drinking wine, especially if it's not as fine as our wines, and it has sediment and, you know, whatever it has in it, the bottom is like Yeah. Right? It's like gunk and whatever. It's disgusting. What?
Drink clunky tongue.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you don't want to touch that. So it's going to be muksa. So maybe we shouldn't be allowed to drink wine. So the Gemara says, Didan chazal tanagolin. Now you could feed ours and get the chickens drunk. Okay? Okay? So the Gemara says, Didhu, nami chazal tanagolin. You could do that with theirs also. So the Gemara says, no, Didhu, isurei hanan. Theirs, you can't because it is isurei hanah. So the Gemara says, fine, we'll tell Talinu agav kasa. So why don't you just move it based on the cup? Mm-hmm. Right? Milo Amarava Metaltalin Kinuna Agav Kitme. Aren't you allowed to move this pot thingy because of the fine ashes on top of your life? Use Avagav Dikalashra Itim, even if there's broken wood in it as well. Where it says, Hasam Lavi Surana Ninu Hacha Isure Hana Ninu. So Amarle Vacha Midifta Ravina Vilahavi Shalgref Shalre. Why is it usur? Right? So this is what I want to focus on. The Gemara says, but I don't get it. Why is it usur? I understand it's disgusting. So what category should that make it? Muksa,
machmas
mius, right? One of the muksa categories are things which are disgusting are muksa, but there's an exception to muksa machmas mius, which is called graf shel rei, right? Graf shel rei is literally the what's it called in English? What?
Bedpan.
Yeah, the bedpan, right? The right things which are really disgusting are not muksa. So graf shel rei is an exception carved into the category of muksa machmas mius. Right? Right, so you have muksa machmas mius, things which are muksa because they're disgusting, therefore useless, and then things which are so disgusting that even though they really should be muksa machmas mius plus, they become mutter because they're so bad. Chazal wave the iser to allow you to get rid of it because it's just like, you know, disgusting. You don't want, you know,
well, right? Is it because the iser was waived, or because muksa machmas mius is something that you're docha b'shtei adayin because it's so disgusting, you're not going to touch it? But a graf shel rei is so disgusting that you know you're going to move it.
Ah, so we'll come back to that in 1 second. Let's finish the line. So Amar Leh, v'chi osin graf shel rei lechatchila. You're right, but you're not allowed to make a graf shel rei lechatchila, and therefore you can't rely on this because if it turns into, right, you use the bathroom, so now it's a graf shel rei, fine. But you can't orchestrate a situation, right? Invite the guy which will make the cup a graf shel rei, that you couldn't do. But you're right, it might have been a graf shel rei. Okay. This is going to be out of order the way I wanted to do it, but that's fine. The fundamental question, conceptually, in graf shel rei, now the main sugya is actually not here, the main sugya is on daf lamed aleph, on daf lamed vav, but I'll bring it up now anyways. The central question in graf shel rei is, clearly what we're talking about is something which is, should be muksa machmas mius, right? The question is, why isn't it? So there's really two ways of going about that. One is to say, it is muksa machmas mius, right? It basically is muksa machmas mius, but we waive the iser, or I shouldn't even say that. We don't waive the iser. We hold the iser in abeyance because it's just disgusting, so we allow you to move it even though it's mukta. Right? The second possibility is to say, no, even though it should be mukta machmas mius, it is mutter ligamre, either because, right, we just remove the iser. It's, you know, hey mamru ve hey mamru, all of mukta is derabanan anyway, so they get rid of it. Or maybe what David's saying, that when something is so disgusting that it's not just that you don't want to have anything to do with it, but like you want it away, right? So it's not really mukta at all, right? Mukta is something you have no use for. You don't have a use for, but you have a use for getting away. Like, it's already planted in your mind. But however you want to formulate it, the point is the fact that it is a just disgusting means that it's not mukta at all, right? Somehow it's overcome the problem of mukta ligamre. Now, what's going to be the nafkamina to a question like that, right? Presumably, the nafkamina to a question like that, as we'll see, is if you have the possibility, let's say, of having a guy move it, should you do that? Do you need to do that? Is there any reason to do that, right? Things like that, as we'll see in poskim, are going to come up, meaning how much of a heter is this? Similarly, you might have thought that the question of v'chios and graf shel rei is also part of it. Right? If you think it's just not muksa at all, so why shouldn't you make it l'chatchila? If you think it's muksa, we just hold the issue in abeyance, fine, but you shouldn't create that situation l'chatchila. Possibly that would hang this question, lav davka, but possibly. Okay. Now, as I said, the two main sugyas of this, there's actually three in Beitza, but there's two main ones. One is here, and the other one is on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. So if you turn to Lamed Vav Amud Beis, right, so this is before the Mishnah. Now the Gemara says as follows: V'nosin kli tachas hadlef b'Shabbos. The Gemara commenting on the Mishnah, you're allowed to put a kli. You're allowed to put a vessel under the where the rain, right? The dirty rain comes from the roof, right? Like underneath the gutter, right? To catch the dirty water that's flowing off your roof. You're allowed to catch it. So the Gemara says, right, so this is the 2 dots right before the Mishnah. Tana, im dismali a kli. If it gets filled up, shofich the shona ve'ino nimna. Right, so you're allowed to right, just pour it. Sorry, veino nimna. You're allowed to just pour it out. Beirechaye da abaye dlof. Right, so Rashi says adalvaye nofal al rechayim shelo vayosin v'tiv and imochem v'neig shamelo maspik lekeila matzichan lasi tachas adalv. Right, because right, by abaye it would end up pouring on his mill and it would destroy it. Right, meaning this is part of why you want to get rid of the rain. It's destructive. Fine. So also look may de rabba. Amrele zil aile lipurayich. Here's what I think you should do, right? Lipurayich lasam. Bring it to your bed. So what does that mean? Rashi says as follows: Lubayis shehu sham. One, right? You can't move it because it's falling on your mill. But I have a suggestion. One, you move it into your house. Shehu sham. D'lhavik riyav sharei shehu meusim areichayim lecha lios lifnei mitascha v'atamut l'taltlan otzian l'chutz k'damar l'kamon d'graf sharei mut l'otzia l'ashba. One, you orchestrate it so that this reichayim won't be, I don't know, in your living room, right? It'll be in your bedroom. Because then it'll get really disgusting, and you don't want to sleep with this thing near you. And if it's in your bedroom, it's so disgusting to you when you're sleeping, so you'll be allowed to move it, right? So orchestrate that it will be a graf sharei. So Yosef Abaye the Kakashale, and he said you can't do that. V'chiosin graf sharei lechatchila. You're not allowed to do that lechatchila, right? Yes, something which is. In, right, which is in your bedroom and really disgusting and hard to make and hard, you know, makes it hard to sleep. So it's a graf shel, you're allowed to move it, but you can't orchestrate a situation that disgusting thing will end up in your room in order to be matrid. In the meantime, it fell. Amar tasteli the avrei ademar amar shmuel graf shel rei avet shel meimir reglayim mutal lotzien laashbok shemachzir nosin abomayim amachzir sover min graf shel rei agav. Okay, well, you know, we'll leave it for there. We're not getting into the whole sugya, but that's, right, again, the same point, that, right, these really disgusting things, what's important that the Gemara adds there is that graf shel rei is not an objective term, it's a subjective term, right? These mills got disgusting, but not disgusting enough that, you know, if it was in your living room, you cared. It was disgusting enough that if it's in your bedroom, that you cared, right? I mean, clearly, the graf shel rei, therefore, is, if something gets so disgusting for the context that you need it away, you're allowed to move it. But you could have something which is graf shel rei in one context and not another, right? So, for example, right, if you had something, let's say, which turned into a graf shel rei in your, I don't know, in your garage, presumably you can't move it on Shabbos, right? You could if it was in your living room, right? So whatever the case is going to be, right? You know, there's a... I don't know, there's a you know, a sewage leak, right, that comes through and drips onto, you know, a chair in the middle of your living room, right? So that is literally a graf shel rei. At that point, you can move it out. If you had an extra living room chair, you know, dining room chair sitting in your garage, and there was, you know, some sort of, you know, sewage leak, and it got there, the same thing, right? You can't move it, because presumably, where are you moving your chair to? You can move it out to the garage, right? So if it's in the garage, you can't move it, right? Graf shel rei is situational. Okay.
So is that covered of breeze?
So that is what many of the Rishonim say, is that the heter is based on uncovered of brios. And we'll see that. I don't remember which source I put it on anymore, but yeah, some of the Rishonim are going to say exactly that. The heter is based on graf shel rei. So let's go through the Rishonim. Go through the Rishonim here. So if you look at number 7, the Ritva says as follows. He says, okay, Perush. V'nesar kos machwans hayayin ha'atzer sheish bod lo chazi bod olav. Okay, right, we're talking about something. Once the wine is in the cup, it becomes asher because it's not usable anymore. Fine. Mi'as kemen jehunach sham l'das. Right, since it's put there intentionally, the avol pi shelo hayasham ben hashmashos, and even though it's not there ben hashmashos, and normally, right, so this ritva doesn't get to the heart of graf shel rei, but it's important just to understand the sugya. He says, as I mentioned before, right, in response to David's question, normally things only become usher, like as a basis, when they became usher ben hashmashos. But if they become usher on Shabbos, the level of muktzah is less. But here, it's clear that we're saying the cup will become muktzah potentially. even on Shabbos. So the Ritva wants to know, okay, well, how is that possible? So he says, Umiyu, Kolshin is Stalin Misham Isser, Hutra Koshlo Neser, Lehecha Shunoksham Benashmash, Ledas, Umisham Migu Deskatsai Benashmash, Deskatsal Kulayomba. So the difference is, as I said before, things can become muksa on Shabbos. The only way something can become muksa on Shabbos, regardless of whether the muksa object is there or not, is if it happened ben hashmashos, right? So, if you have a, you know, the candle plate, right? It is only muksa while the candles are burning, right? If it was burning ben hashmashos, so then even when the candles finish burning, it is aser, and that's why you need to put the ring or whatever you put on it to make it a bas ledavar aser ledavar amutter. But let's say, you know, a goy came into your house and lit a candle for himself and put it on the tray in the middle of Shabbos. So then it would only be aser while the candle's burning. But once the candle finished burning, it would be mutter. Right? That's the general rule of mukta. Is if it happened ben hashmashos, it retains its status as aser, even when the reason that made it aser is removed. Because, for the very simple reason, mukta is about pushing it out of your mind. If ben hashmashos, it was pushed out of your mind, it remained pushed out of your mind for all of Shabbos. If when Shabbos came in, it wasn't usher, so then it's not fully mukta, because it's not huksa midaito. You have in mind that this tray is a mutter tray, while it has a candle on it, burning, so it's mukta because it's currently being meshamesh, a candle. So the Ritva says that's really what's going on here, right? If you could get rid of the wine, then nachanami, it would be mutter. The point is, while the wine is there, it's aser. And that type of muksa can be created. He says, but he says, and even that secondary prohibition, though, right, where something becomes muksa as long as it's in there, he thinks is only things which are defined as a basis. Meaning what? Let's say the guy drank the wine, right, and spilled a little bit onto your carpet, right, and you now want to move your, you know, you have a space rug, whatever it's
area rug.
Thank you. You have an area rug, and you want to roll it up for whatever reason, right? You want to roll it up because, you know, it already has a little bit of wine on it. You don't want more stuff to get on it, or you always roll it up. Whatever you do, you always roll it up after the meal. I don't know why you do that, but okay, you always roll it up after the meal. Whatever you do. So the Ritva says that's mutter, right? Because that's not a basis, right? The fact that a little bit of wine got on the area rug doesn't make the area rug the basis to the wine, because obviously not. The only reason, right, even that secondary level of mukta, that something can be mukta on Shabbos, is only true when the cup with wine in it is actually, right, you have a wine glass. A wine glass is a wine glass. So you can't say, oh, the wine is insignificant to the wine glass, so why are you caring about it? Just look at it as a glass and forget that the wine is there and say it's not muksa. You can't do that. It's a wine glass, right? The fact that the wine glass has the dregs of wine in it, someone looks at it and says, hey, it's a used wine glass, right? You can't deny that there is wine in it, right? That is now usher bahana'a. So the Ritva says 2 points. So one is that something can become muksa on Shabbos. It just, the only thing that needs ben hashmashos is for something to remain usher even after the usher thing is removed. And two is even that secondary level of mukta that's created on Shabbos is only when the mukta object in some way actually relates to the identity of the object it's transforming into a basis, right, into a base for the usher thing, right? So a wine glass is actually a base for wine, and therefore if there is usher bahana wine in the wine glass, it is usher. That makes sense. If it, right, or, okay, why am I picking an area rug? Easier case, it spills on your tablecloth, right? Your tablecloth is not mukta, right? You don't relate to that wine now as wine. You relate to that as a stain on your tablecloth, right? That doesn't make it, right, mukta. So that's the second point that the Ritva says, right? Vubasis lo gumwar. The wine glass is actually a basis. That's what it is. Masha enkein bahidil el, the sufsleyaga rifta, the lovitasa rifta, mishum lach rifta lsufsle. He said, yeah, that's why the bread with the seeds doesn't become usher, because you're allowed to move the bread because it's in this middle case. It is carrying the seeds, but no one looks at it and says, oh, that is a beautiful receptacle for seeds, right? It's not, right? That's not usher, so therefore it didn't take on the status of buses. Okay, The Ra'ah, quoted in the Shemuel Kubetz, number 8, says as follows. The Ilu Hunok Sham Yaim, Shu Osr Mitchila, Kodam Hanacha, Lo Haya Basis Lo Lefish Ein Haklim Yuchot L'Yayin, Osr, Abom Nesha Hunok Sham Kshu Yayin, Kshayin Mutter, Vuhu Kliyam Yuchot Lo Nazis Basis, Bodin Allah, Mia. So he says, it depends, right? He has a slightly different formulation. He says, he agrees with the Ritva that in order for something to become a basis, it needs to be something which is designated for this type of object. But he goes a little bit farther. The Ritva just says, why does the wine glass become a basis to the wine? Because the wine glass is a wine glass, and therefore any wine in it is designated to be in it. But the Ra'ah goes farther, and he says, we don't just look at the physical object and say, hey, this is a wine glass, so it makes sense it has wine in it. How many from Jews have treif wine glasses, right? Right, you have your dairy, your fleishik, and your treif, right? Most Jews don't have that. So the Ra says, I understand that the Ritva says that something only becomes mukhtar. It's the other way around, because the Ritva is a Talmud of the Ra. But fine, right? I understand the svara of the Ritva, that something only becomes mukhtar when the object in it relates to its identity. But the Ritva looks at it from the vantage point of the physical object. This is wine, and this is a wine glass, and therefore wine belongs in a wine glass. The Ra says, I don't just take into account physical identity, I take into account halachic identity. And a frum Jew's wine glass is not designated for treif wine, it's designated for kosher wine. So the Ra asks, so how could it be, if the Ritva Svara is right, that something only becomes muktzah when the identity is shared with the Asr object, then the treif wine should not make the cup Usher because it wasn't designated for treif wine, right, for Stam Yenem.
But to change a treif wine cup to be a kosher wine cup is a simple process.
Correct. I mean, here I agree with the Ritva. I don't understand what the Ra is talking about.
You can say more, because, I mean, this isn't from inside, but it stands to reason. If we're going to say that what makes it Usher is it's identified with an object that it's that's Usher, my intuition would say that the Isser should be because of the Isser of Yontif, not because of some external Isser, like Gayin Sanyinim or Yayin Nesim.
Right, but the Isser
on Yontif, it wouldn't be Isser Asur at all. I mean, we've learned beforehand that you could toivel kelim that had Yayin Stum in it on Yontif itself.
Well, that's exactly where I'm,
But this is Shabbos.
Okay. Well, this is already Shabbos. This is Shabbos.
Or Shabbos, same way. That the whole concept of muktzah is to protect Hilchos Shabbos. So if we're going to identify something with an iser, with something else that makes an iser, I would think we're talking about something that's iser because it's Shabbos, not
right. So that the Gemara seems to assume is not the case, right? Because the Gemara is assuming it becomes muktzah because of the Stam Yenem aspect, right?
So I
understand, but the assumption is no, right? Because muktzah machmas etim vavanim being. What you're relating to is muktzah machmas iser. Muktzah machmas iser is that, right? That something is only muktzah because it's asur on Shabbat. Muktzah of etzim and avadim is muktzah because it's useless.
Okay, but the right. But stanyenam isn't useless. I'm asur. It's asur for me to use it, but my guest who's a guy.
Now it's asur b'hana. That's the problem, right? That's the assumption thing. The Ra's answer, which I find a bit weird, but okay. The Ra says no. The reason that the way we circumvent this problem is by saying that the cup became a basis when the wine was in it and it was still kosher, right? It's just that it is a basis to the wine, and then the wine after it was already the basis. Meaning this is like fancy lumdus, right? It's the cup was a base for wine, beheter. Right? Meaning my cup is filled with water. It is a legitimate base for the cup of water. So he says, so the cup became identified as the basis for the wine. But then, in the middle of the guy drinking, that wine that was once mutter transformed into iser. But the wine had already been identified with the cup when it was mutter, and then the iser status, right, sort of seeps in to the identity of the cup, and now it became a basis to usher wine. That is deserving of any brisker, right? That is like very fancy lumdus. I think the Ritva is much more pashtus, right? I mean, the Ritva saying that something only becomes a basis if it's identified with the object, but it doesn't matter, it's the physical object, not the halachic object we're talking about, I think is more reasonable than the Ra'ah, and I don't know what that means. Also, Metzias problem that I have with the Ra'ah, The assumption of the Gemara is that people invited over Goyim, at least during the week, and gave them wine. So, I mean, yes, we don't invite Goyim over if he's going to treifa for our Kalim, but apparently everybody in the time of the Gemara did. So I don't know what he's saying, that your cup is not designated for treif wine. Apparently it was designated for treif wine. Because if every time a Goy came over, you gave him wine, and the wine was not mavushal, then your cups were constantly becoming treif. So I don't know what the Ra'ah's relating to, that, I don't know, I don't fully wrap my head around this Ra'ah, but anyways, it's worth seeing. Okay, from here on in, what's left is Makar Zabagrafshal, right? But I guess that's going to have to be next week.
What did Rabbi Shua Ben Levi hold? In other words, that he said you could invite a Goy on Shabbat. Did he not believe that this Mokset existed, or he just...
So that's the question. Did he not believe it existed, or he didn't think it mattered? Right, but that's what we're going to see. Right, that's what we're going to see. We'll get through it in Graf Shalrei, as much as we're going to do this. Again, we're not actually exhausting the sugya, but even without exhausting the sugya, it's taking us time.
Isn't the assumption, aside from the cost issue, that it's because it's Shabbos, you're not going to cook, so you don't have to worry who you're cooking?
No, you're not going to cook, right? So, but Rabbi Shubin,
you can invite the good.
Right, but this Shita in the Gemara had said, right, that was the Machlokes Gemara, is that we paskin, you're allowed to invite Goyim on Shabbos, not on Yom Tov. But the Gemara was quoting a data that on Shabbos is a problem of creating a Graf Shalrei, right? We're going to reject it, and the question is... Well, right, but right, I mean, we don't paskin like this. The question is, do we not paskin like it because this is not called making Graf Shalrei Lechatchila, or do we just reject the whole halacha of making Graf Shalrei Lechatchila as part of the issue in the Gemara?
What I have to say is you can invite Goyim on Shabbos.
Yes, that is how we
paskin. Don't serve wine.
Or you serve Mavushal. Right, it's in Mavushal, which is, for the record, a smart thing to do if you're having non-Jews at your table. Right? Why are you having non-Mavushal wine at your table?
Given they use pottery or clay for cups, what do they do with the goitas?
No, you can kosher cheres from wine.
You can.
Yeah, from cheres, whatever. Three times, whatever. There's because it's not really koshering. You're really cleaning it more than that. Okay, whatever. That's a sugya really for another time. It's a sugya of Avodah Zarah. If you go, I don't know. You can ask Rachel Chiner. He does the Avodah Zarah share, and I'll leave it.